Welcome to Leadership Reimagined, Episode 2. What can we do with Patrick Novak, Founder and Chief Empowerment Officer at Trident Strategies? During each episode, we look at leadership from the vantage point of what it's going to take for leaders to lead their organizations forward into a new future. Today, Patrick and I have a conversation on what leaders can do for their organization. I'm Dr. Jane Lovis, your host. Okay, so Patrick, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Patrick Novak, I'm the founder of Trident Strategies. We do business development, leadership consulting, and tactical advisory services here in the DC area.
Great. And we were going to have a conversation about leadership today. And I loved what you said about the challenges of everything that's there that can affect leadership and the possible negative impacts on leadership. And boy, we have a lot of things going on right now.
We do. We have a tremendous amount going on.
So I'd love to explore that a little bit more and see what do we create? What do we come up with that we can support leaders in as they grow their business or they as we come out of the virus, the lockdown, the quarantine. So what are some things that what are you seeing right now that's really a challenge for leaders?
So if you imagine in a fun kind of way, if you created a visual for this, imagine we're back in Neanderthal days and we're all sitting in caves and someone removed the rock and said, all right, guys, you can all come outside to this brand new world that we've recreated, right? We're stepping into a new normal, whatever buzzword that you'd want to apply to the scenario, right? So you've got everyone stepping out from their caves at the same time, and they're looking to, they want normalcy, they want predictability. Humans absolutely are driven by consistency in what they do and the repetitiveness by which they do their things. And so when you alter someone's and you alter a company's repetitive practices or their normal practices, things can go to hell. So what I see is that some of the companies that were, I guess, already at the cutting edge of this were the ones that were looking at the human dynamic of the company and supporting that as the most important thing that you could possibly focus on. You increase your digital footprint, you increase your digital capability. That's an expandable business model, right? That's how you, if you're a digital-based entity or you produce computer programs or apps or whatever it may be, that puts you in a very good category for earning a lot of money in a really short period of time.
Right.
What's not as expansive or what's maybe not as popular of a business model today has been taking care of your people and focusing on the human aspects of business as much. Mm-hmm. Right. So you have this tremendous like bridge you have to build because as we forgot about human, we were building technology this way and then we forgot about humanity this way. And then the nexus meant that we couldn't operate our IT companies if we weren't taking our human people.
Right.
So sorry to use so many of the quotations, but everyone's got a fun buzzword or a cool way they want to say things. So for me, I see that the best people and the best companies are the ones that are deploying emotionally intelligent tactics to help their companies advance in a smart way. And there's so many ways to do that, but that's what I'm seeing. And the ones that aren't,
they're going to continue to go downhill because, you know, and we had this discussion before too, that you don't have a company without your people.
Exactly.
you can have some of the best software. If you don't have salespeople to sell it, if you don't have developers to develop it, if you don't have, you know, your support staff to support your people, you don't have a company.
Exactly. And that was part of your background too. Like you have that background. What's very cool about that is that you have the technical background to be able to comment on what that gap really looks like. Yeah. Right? Because you expect a certain pod of technologists to drive something, mm-hmm. but without the advisory, without the linking, without the inputs from the human leadership on the other side, you keep widening and widening the gap. So you have a really good perspective on that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And that's one of the things, that's why doing this podcast is, you know, Leadership Reimagined. How do we reimagine powerful, effective leadership and leaders? Because leadership is like a thing. It's leaders are being leaders. CEOs, people do this, you know, they're being something. And right. They're either being powerful, effective leaders or not effective. And it's not always that black and white. And we've got an opportunity right now with as we're dealing with this and as we're coming out of it, to create that new normal. And, you know, you probably hear too, it's not a new normal. What does a new normal mean? Well, the human condition is such that we want some level of normalcy. So as soon as it's out there, I mean, we're kind of living in this right now as a new normal, you know, wearing masks, staying home, being cautious when we go out, that is becoming a new normal because people like, as you said, consistency.
Right.
And so the challenge was, this happened with so little preparation.
Exactly. Normally you have a long time frame to communicate a change. What's one of the major tenets of a successful change is the change management aspect, right? Okay, guys, 18 months from now, our company's going to change. We're going to go pursue a different product. We're going to pursue a different way of doing business. We're going to compensate people differently. And everyone goes, what? You can't change something on me. This is the way it's always been. People are afraid of change. They like consistency. And you want to have a high tolerance for risk in business. That's a very good thing. But if you can create risk in a consistently predictable way, that can improve your the possibility for you to survive when the stuff hits the fan like it did with the pandemic. You can't control. The government tells you, hey, guys, you can't actually open your business. That's a pretty dangerous thing to say to a bunch of companies. And I can't even imagine. I have some friends that are in the restaurant business here in D.C., and I can't even begin to fathom what it means for them not being able to do anything as it relates to their business other than maybe deliver. But then the traditional, you know, Beltway Bandit kind of companies around town, they have a completely different operating model. So they can operate in this dynamic. So, you know, we're all talking about some similar solutions that a lot of things can go across every different vertical that we're talking about. It can apply to the restaurant business. It can apply to the IT companies. And our discussion today is how leadership can affect all those dynamics. Mm-hmm. How communications can improve how people feel about change. And being uncomfortable with the unknown is the reason why leaders are chosen, because people who are uncomfortable and are able to calm themselves and able to put themselves in a good place are the ones that we look to in society and say, this person has their stuff together and I know we're all in the same boat, but this guy's going to be able to keep us afloat. And so that kind of, for me, that's one of the biggest, that's why it's so cool to see certain leaders unexpected here and there in the business world or otherwise, kind of rise to the moment, right? It's very cool.
Right. And a lot of self-leadership where, as you said, they just kind of risen up. It's not that, you know, they may be leaders in their company. They may be the CEO of their company, but they have taken a step up and said, here, let's look at this. And that's the thing is, what are some of the things as we start moving forward? Because at some point, we do know we're going to come out of this. At whatever coming out of it looks like. So the only way to deal with that is to look at what if, what if, what if, put some plans in place, and then start communicating and sharing that, so it's not, people aren't blindsided. Your employees feel like they're included, that they have a say in what's gonna happen. So what are some things that you're seeing, or just, you know, let's just make up some stuff that, because nobody really knows. So we're starting an early conversation.
Yep.
To give leaders and CEOs the space to go, oh, what if, I mean, what, right now we're just past Memorial Weekend, and with all the, you know, the number of people at beaches and parks and everything, what if we have another flare up in another month, two to three weeks? What if we have another flare up? What could or might people, CEOs, be thinking about for their employees?
That's a really good point, because this Friday here in DC, the mayor is looking to go ahead and have a reopening staging part, right? In every city and every group and governor and the political part of it, they'll do their own thing in terms of how they decide to reopen. The level down that we're talking about is within the corporations, and how can leaders inside of corporations effectively prepare their people for a change that could be coming. Okay. What's really crazy about this dynamic is that 99.7348% of people who are leaders, and that's, you know, that's my very accurate statistics modeling that I've put out there. Of those CEOs, the kind of personalities that are, you know, hard chargers and want their own thing and want their own world to create, none of them are medically qualified to address how to engage a medical pandemic in the context of how they need to operate their companies. So none of them, the vast majority of the CEOs, will not be prepared to address it from a medical point of view. Where they will need to address the scenario, it has to do with how they're going to take care of the emotional well-being of their people. How are they going to be the practical psychologists of their companies? How is that going to improve the lives of their people? So that way, if stuff does hit the fan again, they have been practitioners, or they've outsourced that dynamic to a really good communicator, or someone who knows how to put a really good plan together like yourself to keep the company aware and to keep the all the stakeholders, which are your employees, are your number one stakeholders. Mm-hmm. I don't care, you know, your customers are always going to be very important, but your first line of customers are the people that work for you. There's no debating that scenario, right? So they'll either need to outsource that to people who can develop those plans and those ways to make sure people are feeling involved, like you said, and important in the process. And you know, one small example of a client I have, she had outsourced it, an emotional intelligence aspect of her company to someone who's completely out of state, but she's highly intuitive in helping people to take a positive approach on life and to positively look for solutions no matter the scenario, what's going on. That's just one micro example, but can you imagine the competitive advantages that you have as a company when you explain to people, we have someone on staff, we have someone on retainer who is an absolute expert at getting your mindset in a better place, yeah. Right? And it's true. Like, you know, my balcony out here could be, you know, on fire right now. If I let that fear of fire paralyze me, I won't go to the kitchen to get the bucket of water to put it out. And I won't know how to get out of here and do it in a way that keeps everybody safe. And that's kind of where we're in. We see the fire. We're all alarmist about it. Now we need to outsource it to experts who can help do that function. If you can't as a CEO, many times that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're in charge and you don't have the capability to run that function, it doesn't mean hiring a good HR person. Many times that's not many times you don't want the HR person there to be the advisor for helping to lead the people, because not to say they're incapable of doing so, but it takes a very special skill set and it takes a lot of trust. And the HR function within a company is largely built for the protection and the continuation of that company.
Right.
So you have to, you know, and it, as your company grows and expands, that can impact whether or not you can do that. But successful companies know that they need to augment the human resources department with specialists, with leadership specialists like yourself and others that can communicate a plan to make a difference and to make an impact.
Right. I love that that definition of human resources is that they're human resources is there to protect everyone, the company and the employees from certain, and it's sort of like the school counselors in high school. School counselors in high school are there to help you get into college and make sure that you've got all that you're on track for graduation and your classes. If you have another challenge in your life, that's not a school counselor. And that's the same with human resources. They're there to help ensure that the people things are taken care of. And help supporting the people emotionally with all this change is oftentimes not the area that HR plays in, nor should it play in. And I think that's a place where companies get lost, is they think they've got HR, and there's a very important function, and it's a different function than supporting people to deal with change and look at possibilities. What? Because this is a time where you've got to get outside that box. You've got to start thinking of, I mean, this is the perfect time to be thinking about what are all the crazy ideas that we could possibly have. I was talking to somebody else, and they were saying that there's a Mexican restaurant up in northeastern DC. Mm-hmm. And you know, with the pandemic, it was their business was really going downhill. And even with the takeout, they couldn't quite get enough.
Right.
So they had a friend who had an ice cream truck. So they figured out how to sell margaritas from the ice cream truck.
That's amazing. That's great.
Now, you know, and they have to be sealed. There's some things that they had to do, but they're now selling, they go park and they sell margaritas and tacos.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's great.
So it's like, what, you know, but if you try and put boundaries around what can we do? Well, we can't sell alcohol from a food truck. Well, no, but how could we?
Exactly.
Could we do this? How could, you know, how could we sell? How could we support our employees? You know, we're depending on how long it takes for us to come back to no matter when we can come back, there are going to be employees that say, I don't want to come. I can't come back right now. I mean, what if the schools don't open? You know, so what are ways that we can look at this? How could we? I don't know what the answer is right now, but, and you get enough people looking and in a conversation and creating those crazy ideas that one thing leads to another, somebody will come up with, how can we support our employees? They don't have to quit. We can support them with their children, and we can stay as a going concern.
The financial modeling of this can turn out to be a really positive thing. As people want to change this, because people now are exposed to the work from home thing in a forced kind of way,
yep.
Right? I've seen on social media, people I know that work for certain companies, they're going, I can really do this and I can do my job 100%. And then I see fringe elements go, yo, I am straight up chilling today. I don't have anything to do, when you know they're on the clock. You're always going to have those dynamics. It all comes down to, if you own a company, if you're a leader in a company, what is your responsibility? Everything beneath you, including yourself. If an employee isn't performing because they're working remote and they're not able to perform, that's always on you. That's a decision that you have to make. That person may personally not do their job, but it always is upon leadership to make the right hiring decision. So the reality is this: hiring and being able to monitor people's effectiveness from afar and otherwise, that's going to be a challenge. The positive outcome I see as a result of the work from home scenario is that people will have increased flexibility, which can in turn either have companies look at this from a standard of saying, I'm going to reduce, maybe I'll reduce your salary by 10%, because guess what? I'm paying you X percent less because I know you don't have to drive an hour each way. When you sit 2 hours in a car and you drive into DC, like you will trade one of your non-primary fingers to probably not have that be the scenario anymore, right? You're like, pinky, gone. Like, if I don't have to drive back and forth into DC and I get 2 hours back with, you know, my family, or I get 2 hours back in the gym, I get 2 hours back for my side job, whatever it may be,
right.
You can't replace time for life. There's no way to really equate the value. If I could pay you $1 million for talking to me for this hour, I would, because that's how valuable your life really is, right? You can't put a dollar figure on this, right?
We have
certain relevant rates. We have hourly billed rates because of society has gotten things, but you just can't put a price on human life. It's unpriceable. But when companies need to make money, the way that they need to structure their arrangements moving forward is going to be kind of cool. I think companies will be able to either pay their people more because there's less overhead for their building costs, or they pay their people less and the people get more flexibility and they enjoy life more, which means they're going to want to work more anyways. And then that could compound to create another very positive working environment. What I want to see is next year, I want to see a positive work culture a conference, something where people take a really good, and I see these things every now and then, that like it's either Harvard Business Review or some kind of brain trust that comes up with some badass, really good ideas for how to run companies in the future.
Yep.
And those functions are out there, but guess what? This thing just probably upped their valuation by a few billion dollars.
Yeah. And what I see, another possibility that I see is we do a lot of, you do this and it's going to take you 2 hours to do it. So you need to spend 2 hours doing it. Then when you're done with that, you do this, as opposed to what I need you to do is create this. And if you can do it and it's worth your 8 hours, and if you get it actually done in 6 hours, wonderful. But I need to know. So which is another challenge for leaders and CEOs, of really a new level of clarity on what it is that we're creating and who's involved and who's supporting that. You know, if you've got people that are not involved in that, then why are they in your company?
Who said it? And that comes down to employee engagement. And I think Elon Musk, he's launching a rocket into space today. Not a bad deal, right? Right. You know, he's got a couple companies that he's worked on. He's done a few good things. Right. And, some may look at him as his management being rough, gruff, or otherwise. He's an engineer by trade and design. So we don't expect someone who's a heavy, heavy engineer type to be the best human leader. That's okay. We know that there's a chasm in that dynamic. But he had a cool saying in some article he gave about saying he doesn't have anyone in meetings that don't contribute. So he won't have a meeting. If you're here and you're not talking and you're not contributing to the meeting, why are you in this meeting? You could be working on something that we need from a big perspective. That all comes down to exactly your point, which is redefining employee engagement for the purposes of creation, for the purposes of a specific outcome. And that requires vision and goals and all the things that you're really good at, about getting companies to realize that if I don't tell Susan about the company's goal in 2 years of branching their offices into another area, if I don't tell her that, you know, broad scheme, broad stroke of the company, I won't create the emotion inside of her to do this menial task of looking up a bunch of business licenses in a place to kind of, you know, just go ahead and do this. No, I don't know. Why am I going to do this? Because in 2 years, it's not my job. I don't have buy-in. And I'm a big proponent of, and maybe one day I'll have this opportunity. I hope I'll have the opportunity one day to where I could say to a bunch of people, hey, we're gonna turn into an employee-owned company, because that would be a really fun concept. And that would get everyone's complete and total buy-in. I would love that opportunity one day. But I've seen some of the best companies and the best leaders engage that dynamic. And I always give them like tremendous praise because they know what people will work for when it's everything to them, or it's 5% to them, and it's become much more than a commission check or much more than a salary. It's become a vision of something that we believe in to do. And around here, government contracting is boring and bland, or whatever business you're involved in, it can be boring and bland, but you can still create something and you can still create an emotion inside of people for what they're doing to get a better view of the picture, but to be very clear, to your point exactly, a clear communication as to what they need to get done. So they have that engagement and that buy-in, because what's everything, so tell me what you're saying, or tell me like what your opinion is, because I have a crazy opinion about it. The dissatisfaction in the workplace is at an all-time high.
Oh yeah, yeah. And what I would like to ask you too is, when you see that, if you could snap your fingers and make everyone enrolled, what do you think that would do to the success of the organization, from a growth, from a revenue, from all of those things, if employee satisfaction was at like 99%, 98%?
So the first part of your question I missed because there was a transition of the audio, but your question is, what would happen if we did increase the employee satisfaction marker? Is that what you're saying?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
In the growth of a company into the revenue of the company.
Right. So imagine you want to, let's pick like an easy example. You want to go to the gym, and there's a gym across the street from you. Across the street means you'd have to just simply walk to go to the gym. If there's a bunch of ice cream in your refrigerator and you eat ice cream and you have the TV on and you don't want to do anything, what is so close to you? It seems so far away. So how do you take the action to get there? You have to be in the right mindset, right? You have to have the right mental disposition to take the simple step to go across the street and go into the gym. And that's what you want. You told yourself that's what you wanted. So when we increase satisfaction inside of companies, we want that same dynamic, right? We want to get rid of the things that are distracting people from the goal, which is to walk across the street and to experience the gym so they can work out and make themselves stronger, which in turn makes the company better. My point of view is that I think there's so many studies on what financial impact there is on a happy workforce. There's an endless amount of studies. And there's a reason why major brain trust exists around the desire and the quest to make people happier. And that is a science, it's a psychology, but the general disposition of the public is and can be largely poisoned by the systems that we surround ourselves with that we can't control. And many times I can't control the Twitter, the Facebook, the TV, the internet. I can't control what sources I look at because all of them are compensated in a model that support, you know, clicks and engagement. Yep. And those factors snap into every human that comes into your workplace. And so every human's going to come in with the stresses of a technological age that's basically, I don't get into any political conversations of any kind of flavor because leadership is really separate from that in many ways. Yep. But you don't find a lot of satisfaction in people that are constantly not having original thought and constantly not engaged in a thoughtful discourse with other humans. So we've shortened our attention span. We've shortened our communication ability. We've taken away the ability to debate, you know, fact one, here's fact two, here's fact three. Oh, I like your fact. Your fact is beautiful. Wow. Your point is really good too. Watch us both exist perfectly together and come up with a solution to drive everything. As soon as you kind of point fingers and go back and forth, you lose everybody and you lose many people, and therefore people are unsatisfied. And so in a company, if that same dynamic happens, who wants to go to work? Who wants to walk across the street to go to the gym when it's so easy, but they're on their couch and they're dissatisfied with their lives? So, employers try gimmicks. You know, they may try to put a ping pong table in a room. They may get like a beer tap. They may get like a cold brew tap or something fun that you'd want to find in like a college dormitory to make their area seem as though it's innovative, right?
Yeah.
But it's really not. It's about really involving the people and empowering them to have the conversation. Leadership, the loudest voices in leadership, and that makes them the most satisfied when they get the most say.
Oops, I'm sorry, you missed. You said something about the highest, the loudest voices in leadership.
Yeah, they said, the loudest voices in leadership really are the people. Mm-hmm. And so when they have their loudest voices, guess who has the most buy-in and most satisfaction?
Yeah.
Your people. And what do you get to do? You get to sit back. The best leaders are the ones that kind of get to kind of go, good idea, good idea, good idea.
Yeah.
How do we want to do that? They bring together the talent. They bring together the partners. They bring together the advisors to create a positive culture. As soon as they start talking over everyone else, and as soon as they try to overpower a conversation or dominate the idea, I've seen examples where people, certain leaders might create a culture committee for a company.
Right.
And then when the culture committee goes, this thing is diametrically opposing our satisfaction and these factors are all not in agreement with what we want to do. And the leader's like, oh man, you guys are pointing the finger at me. We got to shut this thing down. That never works. You've completely silenced everyone and their contributions. So yeah, the math is there on unsatisfaction and productivity. And I don't know how much more it's going to take before companies really realize that.
Yeah. And there's a perception that right now with the loss of jobs that companies can pay less and there's going to be more people. And the unfortunate thing is a lot of those people are going to be more dissatisfied.
Wow.
So you're hiring people that are already coming in dissatisfied. You know, because you think you can pay them less and save money and you want them to be productive and thought leaders and creatives, and that's not the world we're in anymore. We need people to want to be enrolled in being thought leaders and creatives.
You could write an entire book off of what you just said. You realize that, right?
I'll be doing something more about that, Patrick. But yeah.
Your snippet right there is so powerful, because you just admitted the 6 month to 12 year problem, which is, you're right. People can come back to work, but employers are going to say, hey, guess what? You get to work remote. And you're like, oh my God, that's great. I made 70K at my last job, but now I'm making 60K, but I get to work remote. Okay, that's good. But if you're not working in the culture and you don't get to, because some companies and some groups can truly operate remotely in a very powerful and very effective way. And
it works.
It takes work. It takes a lot of communication, a lot of coordination. Sure. And like, you know, I know I have one client who like will send care packages to their employees on like a weekly basis. And that's so thoughtful, but I guarantee you, maybe 97.62% of employers aren't doing that on a weekly or monthly basis. And that makes all the difference. If you've got a care package with a bunch of like, you know, foods or toys for your kids or whatever it may be that costs the employer $15 to give you, you go, at least they're thinking about me, man.
Right.
At least somebody's thinking about me. And that is the emotional touch point that goes out. And so your point, you know, really quickly, when you're analyzing the dissatisfaction quotient and you're trying to get people to buy into the culture, if you start at companies remotely, which it's gonna be a fascinating thing that I'm sure you and I are gonna talk about in the months to come is who's finding the data on the amount of remote hiring and remote working scenarios, right? So you take those two corollaries and you say, we're hiring remote and now we're working more remote. And then let's take a look at over the course of a year, do they feel as though they're part of a company? Like how much interaction with the company did they really have? Because here's the thing, like I played, you know, sports in high school and college and I do believe that leadership can be a contact sport in which you need to be with other humans. That's what we're designed to be. We're not designed, we are really not designed to be separate all the time.
Yeah.
And isolation is not what our species, it's not even how we begin to operate. And the past 15 years, 20 years since Facebook and, you know, these other groups have been around, that's a snippet in terms of the past 40,000 years of modern humanity and the millions of years that, you know, some version of whatever we are is around. Adam and Eve, I don't care what you believe in. It doesn't matter to me. But in the context here, we've been looking at like, we sneezed touch you and changed in how humanity entirely operates through keyboards. This is great. I feel like I'm, you know, I can connect with you in a real way, even though you're far away. I think it's a really cool thing and it's an empowering thing. But still, if you and I were in a room together, it would increase our satisfaction of interaction by at least 32%, probably, right? These trade-offs that are happening they're fascinating.
Exactly. And the thing, like you're saying, you know, if we were in a room together, there's a different level of communication. And I remember, I can't remember when it was, but 15 years or so ago, gas prices went up.
Right.
And so company said, we're not traveling. And this was the beginning of video conferencing. I mean, it was expensive and it was clunky and you couldn't be in like six different places. You had to be in two, you know, and they said, well, but we can just do video conferencing. We can do sales calls. We can do all of this. And I think it lasted about a year. And they realized there's something about being with someone. So yeah, you know, there's going to be a real push for companies to stay remote and work remote for a while, because people are going to be nervous about coming back in, being with lots of people. So they're going to want, you know, they're going to want to be, have that safety. But as you said, that's not how we're meant to be.
Exactly. And so why we favor the convenience, it's just an indicator of a modification to improve in which in how we work.
Yeah.
Right. So, just having humans near each other working on something is productive. One tiny example of how we got it wrong: open office workspaces.
I knew you were going to say that.
Right? One experiment. Everyone's like, oh, dude, we're going to open up these offices and have this expansive space and we can play football in there. And I'm all for like really cool office spaces. I love my friends that have created like these kick-ass, modern, cool places. I'm big on aesthetics. I would like a marble slate and steel and like cool stuff. I love that. But when we tried to say everyone work in this beautiful open environment, it does not work. And it's been shown in enough studies to say, unless you're in a call center or unless like everyone is very specifically on their phones and that is their job, is they have to be on the phone talking to someone all the time, you forget who's across from you in that dynamic. You know, I had an office one time where I worked in that environment, and I'd come up from my little office along the windows, and I'd come up to a pit of people and I'd coordinate with them, and they that was natural to them because they were on the phone with someone the entire time. When you don't have a call center environment, you can't have this beautiful open office, you know, space. You can't do it because it's going to actually create a people that need to have certain kind of boundaries. When people are quiet and there's all kinds of energies about people that are working on things, some people are being loud. Some people will turn on a TV in a workplace where people are trying to work quietly. So everyone puts on headphones to be in their own little zones. And you have this very weird energy in the space. And your communication is weird. You come up behind someone and you're kind of like, hey, I need to ask you a question. You turn around, you're like, what's going on? What can I do for you? It's not giving people that the space they need. And I'm not big on like, everyone needs like some beautiful personal space bubble around them to protect them. But I am very cognizant of what it means to respect people's time when they work. And I would never want to come up behind someone and just pull them from what they're doing and say, all right, let's go do something.
Yeah.
As far as a best practice, because we see that happens far too often and it's the worst practice in the world. So we're all going to prescribe, we're all going to play like leadership doctor and say how we should go back to it. But I guarantee you, what we agree upon at a large scale will fail probably, because we're going to continue to have cultural, emotional, and productivity distance that will be untenable. And what's that going to create? It's going to create a dynamic where the employer goes, I'm going to hire these five people here are my best people because they come into the office, they participate, and it's going to disenfranchise, wrongly so, five workers who might have more fear, more anxiety. It's no fault of their own. it's nobody's fault that, you know, a dynamic came through, a virus or otherwise came through, and whatever the numbers end up being, you know, for example, the numbers are, you know, we hit maybe 100,000 within a quarter. Smoking kills 450,000. People have their risk a year, right? So people have their relative risks of what they're willing to accept. It's going to create a hiring dynamic inside of companies on top of the one we just talked about, mm-hmm. about where people are feeling, they're feeling sad, disengaged and otherwise. And now we're going to incentivize people who have a greater tolerance for risk and what society is determining as risk today. Mm-hmm. I don't have all the answers either, but I think you and I are part of a pod of people that is trying to ask every question possible, because we're not looking to build a plane or a car. We're looking to take something. We're looking to take the human heart far. We're looking to evolve how the human heart operates in the technological body. Right. And that's a journey, but it needs all these questions, because then you think, all right, let's do this and try it. So.
Yeah. And having conversations in organizations so that that everybody is a part of that conversation. And we just, today's conversation was just throwing out different areas for people to start looking at, for CEOs, you know, start looking at some of these areas, take them and talk to your people, take these challenges to your employees. Trust that your employees want you to be successful when you acknowledge and allow them to be successful.
One of the fun ways I would look to do it is I would, because Zoom calls are exhausting for some people. Some people can go, and I've read enough stuff on that, because I'm not I'm not a psychologist by trade, but I can understand how staring at a bunch of different faces on a screen can be so emotionally exhausting over a certain period of time, because you have to worry about what you're doing, you have to worry about what they're doing, you have to worry about how you're being perceived, you have to communicate yourself in a way, and people that aren't practiced in terms of, it's like public speaking. And you're asking a bunch of people to come into a virtual Zoom room that normally wouldn't even get on a FaceTime call with someone. And now they're being asked to like physically show their faces, and they're introverted by nature, which is a very secret good capability to have. We're asking them to do these kinds of things. A cool thing I would ask maybe employers to do is to say, let's just do something fun. And each week, one of our employees or two of our employees or whoever it is, give a 30-minute like update on what your life is up to and how your work's going, and tell people how you're being the best that you can at your job from home. And each person's gonna have a different answer. My dogs are barking all the time, so I give them treats, or my kids are doing this and I do this, or this is my challenge. If everyone got the opportunity to share their challenge with everyone transparently, if they wanted to, or you know, some people don't want to share their intimate lives, but if you did that as the starting point for the remote people and otherwise, it would allow people to kind of get comfortable with putting themselves out there.
Yeah.
Right. And putting yourself on video is it's a daunting thing, because you worry about what you're going to say. You worry about how you're going to come across. Today, we're so worried about the words that come out of our mouth that we become absolutely paralyzed in how we present ourselves. And we don't want people to have that dynamic anymore. And so, you know, if I'm offering solutions to companies, I'm thinking exactly in line with what you're saying, which is like, talk about it. Mm-hmm. Discuss, simply discuss.
Yep. Creating a safe space, which means you as the CEO, as the leader, has to start it. You can't ask other people to share what challenges they have without your being willing. And it's still going to take some time, because people have to see that this is really a safe space, that I said this and it's not going to be held against me.
Vulnerable communication, right?
Yeah.
Look at Airbnb CEO, look at some of the other CEOs.
Yeah.
They don't need to cry tears. You don't need to see, you know, someone break down and go through like this. And sometimes it happens, whatever it is. But when you see someone communicate, the CEO of a major company like Airbnb communicate, I don't know if you saw his letter or not. I'll send it to you. But the letter he sent out to his employees about some of the changes that they've had to make was so thoughtful. It was so clear. And it was so in line with what a positive culture is, even in a scenario where people are suffering. Like, for example, they really communicated the idea that we're doing everything in our power to help other people get jobs. We don't just say it. Like, we are taking the steps and we are showing the steps. And this is what's happening. These are the people that are getting cut, and it's against everything we believe in, but we have to adjust in what's going on. When you get fired from a company, you get let go from a company that does that, that probably removes half the pain, because they didn't just kick you to the curb. Other companies, like, I think some people got firings over Zoom calls, and it was inauthentic. It was unprepared, and it was not, there wasn't a plan.
Right.
There wasn't a plan around that.
Right? I love your term, thoughtful communication, because to have thoughtful communication, you had to have some thinking behind it. You had to have spent some time with it. And you're right. A lot of times it's like stuff just comes off the cuff, and then the ramifications have to be dealt with. So,
you don't have the convenience of that anymore. And words, here's what's funny about, this is funny. I don't try to get like too ethereal with this stuff, but, it's really funny how today's, in terms of affecting how people feel, since we're all able to share our feelings and our words in a much more expansive way, I can send out a tweet, and I'm not like a, I like to tweet every day on something leadership wise, whatever. But when we send out the tweet, or we send out an email, or we send out a text, the power that those words have is become not outsized to what you're trying to say, but it outsized in terms of its impact and its last and its staying power. Mm-hmm. For example, if you and I 20 years ago were having a conversation about leadership in a room, we wouldn't take everything that was said in that room, and we wouldn't take like your best line, that like one of the best paragraphs you gave earlier that you're going to write another book on, or one line here, we wouldn't take that and stamp it into eternity. That's what we're doing with the technological bubble and construct that we've put into our veins, is that every thought you've had, every communication you've had is being stamped into an eternal portal, right?
Yeah.
So forever, everyone can go back and say, at here, at this point in time, you said employees should do this, and you said people should do that. And people change over time, and they evolve, and ideas change, and they evolve over time.
Right.
Facebook now isn't what it was like 15 years ago.
Right.
And so, you know, we're going to find that, it, just in line with what you're kind of pointing out, thoughtful communication will be a competitive advantage for companies moving forward.
Yeah.
People will gravitate to the best communicators, and they'll gravitate to the people who have the best vision and the most positive outlook. And those companies will win. And the companies that will lose are the ones that want to like pretend it's coal mine working hours, the kind that don't care about their humans, and the kind that fail to articulate a vision that is tangible. Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I think this is a great place to end this conversation, because it takes care of everything that we have ever talked about and wraps it all up into here's the place to start from.
Exactly. I agree. Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Patrick. This has been a great conversation. I, like you said, we're going to be having more of these. And there's some ideas percolating that we need to talk about too. So
I'm with you. I'm with you, Jane. Thank you so much. You're very smart to bring us together, and we've got some work to do. I appreciate appreciate what you do.
Thanks, Patrick. Talk to you later.
Bye. All right. Have a great day.
Thanks for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. Make sure to visit our website, lovisconsulting.com, to access previous shows and learn more about us.